when he needed money, he would send something out and say, go ahead and publish it. So some of the autobiography stuff is published, and I think they did it in the North American Review and sort of pieces. But he would try, he sent the War Prayer and some of these others to the publishers, and when they were rejected, he stopped sending them. So, for example, to the person sitting in darkness, if I remember correctly, I looked it up in Berkeley, where the Twain papers are, University of California, Berkeley, and it's published in the North American Review, and it's the last article in the journal. The first one is William Dean Howells writing Why We Love Mark Twain. So he was sort of protecting him, I think, for this scathing condemnation of the McKinley administration and these blessings of civilization that the poor Philippine natives couldn't handle. So,
what I was wondering, Sarah, was whether you have felt in your truth-telling that you had to pull back, or are there things you've written and shoved in a drawer because you can't get them published?
I haven't had that problem yet, but I look forward to it.
That's good.
I mean, the thing is, things are so segmented now, you know? Like, like, when I go around giving readings, the people who show up are the people who would come to one of my readings. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Even at the height of, say, like 10 years ago, when things were, I was going to say divided in this country, not that things have gotten all that much better, but when we got into that war, or one of them,
I was gonna
and
say,
how
which,
people
which,
were, you know, theoretically arguing about that, but really it was, the people don't even really do that anymore. They just kind of hover around their own little campfires, you know? So, I mean, when I was writing, like Mark Twain, when I was writing against my country's anti-imperialist tendencies, I was doing it for the New York Times, but like him, everything I said was obviously completely ineffectual. I mean, at some point, I felt like I should have just been faxing them into the trash can next to my desk, you know? I mean, it definitely warmed my heart to go back and read some of the writings of Twain and other people who were in the American Anti-Imperialist League and talking about how, you know, when the United States became an empire during the Spanish-American War and right after, that this was, you know, this went against everything we were supposed to believe in. It went against the principles of self-government. And while it was nice to know that people felt that way, they obviously lost. You know, just like people like me who had qualms about the invasion of Iraq. I mean, I don't know how many pieces I wrote about that and about how upset I was, but, I mean, it didn't do anything, you know. I mean, I guess it made the other grumblers feel better, but I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I guess like him, I guess I feel, like what good did it do?
Ben?
Right. I do. Can I just interject something about that's a little bit different for Sarah than Twain, and maybe Sarah can respond to this. But when Twain did this, you know, he was beloved by the time that he started writing these pieces against our involvement in this.
That's true.
Situation.
I've never had that problem.
So, but I guess
he was so universally beloved, and I've always been kind of a niche person, you know.
Well, but I think you're beloved for those people. I see what you're saying about when people come to see you, they expect a certain thing. But when people came to see Twain, maybe it was just a broader circle. But what I was going to get at though is he was viewed as a humorist. And at the time he was writing this, the New York Sun, which was a pro-imperialist paper, they wrote about him. They said, well, oh, poor Mark, he's in a mortifying intoxication of seriousness, something to which his head has not been yet hardened. And so they didn't take him serious at first. But as his writing went on, this is why in the 20th century we can go back and look at him. He wasn't considered one of the five greatest American authors by the time he died. It was only in the 20th century that happened. So they thought, oh, what is this humorist doing writing about these serious issues? We'll have our Mark back. And Twain, to his credit, he stayed on that anti-imperialist league for the entire time it existed.
Well,
he never bailed.
I do kind of understand what it's like in this sense. Like, if you can be funny, there's a certain mm-hmm. segment of the audience that is only going to want you to be that, or
right.
vice versa. There's a certain right. segment of, I mean, I remember once at I did a reading and a guy got his book signed and he said, you know, the thing I don't like about you is, to me, he said this, which is always a great opener. He said, I like to put people in boxes. Like there's the funny box,
oh, yeah.
there's the serious box, whatever. And you, I don't know which box to put you in that upsets me. And there are always going to be people like that. But I think it's especially a betrayal if someone has made you laugh because, I don't know, people not only they like to laugh, sometimes when I do these readings, and I guess when I do the readings, I kind of, I definitely skew to maybe the more funnier or narrative bits. And, you know, later when someone's sitting by herself, she can read, like, the long passages of Indians being massacred or Hawaiians having an epidemic or whatever. There are, like, mm-hmm. big stretches in my books that are pretty dang sad, I think, but I don't mm-hmm. usually read those in front of people. But sometimes when I'm at the podium, like, an audience has this kind of craving to laugh, and it's a very palpable thing, and it's sometimes it unnerves me because, especially if I know something sad is a-coming, mm-hmm. I try to do everything I can to screw up my voice or, mm-hmm. or to, like, make the audience aware, like, guess what? This isn't going to last forever. Here comes the point. Or right. here's where the guy commits suicide. Or, you know what I'm right. saying? Like, sometimes, like, when you make people laugh, that's all they want you to do because, I mean, who doesn't want to laugh?
But I think that that's an audience and generational type thing. If you read a lot of Twain's speeches, and he has long passages in several of his travel books and things like Following the Equator and things like this, where you go, well, where's the punchline, if you were looking for that? And I mm-hmm. suspect that some of the audience today has the short attention span theater thing happening. You know, they want to hear only the thing they want to hear, but they were more willing to be educated and listen to lectures of a different kind in the 1800s.